everybody. This is Stephen Louie, and we have another edition of the Grower IQ podcast for you. Today, we have Mike McAnless from Native Roots on the show. Hey, how are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Not too bad. Mike is one of the lead growers at Native Roots. Mike, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and the operation at Native Roots?
Yeah. So I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio. Just really wanted to explore the marijuana industry. So I moved out to Colorado in 2015, was hired with Native pretty much right off the bat, started kind of in the lower ranks and just worked my way up through the ranks of the grow. And now I'm one of the head growers.
Nice. And did you have background in cannabis before that? Or horticulture?
A little bit here and there, but nothing formal.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And then what year did you join Native Roots?
I started in August of 2015.
At what position did you start?
I started on what's called our transition team, which is really the entry-level team in our grow. They do a lot of cleaning, transplanting, harvesting, just kind of miscellaneous grow-related tasks, but not directly affecting living plants.
Okay, gotcha. And now you've worked your way up to one of the lead growers, is that right?
Correct, yeah. My title is head grower.
Head grower. And can you tell us a little bit about the operation at Native Roots? What kind of grow methodology, the genetics, et cetera?
Our large facility probably has 70,000 plants. We grow in cocoa. Wow. We use in-house made synthetic nutrients. We grow about 50 cultivars in like a large production scale. And then we have some smaller scale things where we're testing out new genetics to try and keep things refreshed and current.
Gotcha. Well, and talking about current, how are you guys staying up to date with new information on cannabis and new growing SOPs, et cetera? Or are you developing those yourselves?
I think for the most part, we're developing ourselves. You know, I think pretty much anything you find, like, you need to try and make sure that it works for you in your space. We might hear tidbits of, hey, what if we try this? And then, you know, we always kind of keep like a small portion of the grow, like maybe 5%, that's for R&D and just trying new things, you know. And so let's do some trials here and let's try to eliminate it down to just one variable trial. And, you know, what does this change? How does that affect yield, potency, terpenes, and, you know, your overall outcome?
Right. And have you had any interesting successes out of that, or even interesting failures out of that?
I can't think of any like profound failures. You know, sometimes you might think that you're going to see an outcome and then you realize that maybe it wasn't worth it.
Right.
One thing that I noticed, like, you know, I started doing a mid bloom flush, just to kind of like reset the salts that are in the pot. And, you know, I actually found that to be very helpful. There was a section of plants where I had two strains, one section that did not get that flush and one section that did get the flush, and across both strains saw about a 10% yield increase. I saw a slight potency increase and a slight terpene increase.
Wow.
So it was pretty interesting. Like, you know, that flush is just really just kind of hitting the media with a high volume of a very low strength feed. And, you know, it was interesting to see that just what happens this one day has such a profound impact on the outcome.
Yeah. And so you've been getting consistent results, improvements with doing that mid bloom flush?
Yeah. I haven't really found any areas where it's been detrimental. You know, some strains seem to take to it better than others, you know, so some you're going to get, you know, kind of a larger beneficial reaction, but I haven't found anything where it's like impacted negatively.
So, but across the board, it's improved things no matter the genetics or
yeah, whatnot. Pretty much.
Yeah, that's amazing. And what sort of clued you into trying that?
Really, it's just following the EC of the pot. You know, like, we have an EC meter, that's electroconductivity, which is a measure of the salts that are in the pot. And realizing that around like week three of bloom, it was kind of getting to the higher range of what I wanted it to be. And so I figured, you know, like, okay, what if I give it a really low feed, kind of flush a lot of that immobilized salt out and just kind of allow things to build back up from there? And was then actually surprised with, you know, how beneficial it was.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And then once you figured that out, is that now standard SOP across the entire grow?
Right. So normally I'll try stuff on a very small scale first. If it works there, I'll do it a little bit bigger. If it works there, maybe a little bit bigger. And if it continues to show, you know, the same improvement through all trials, then I'll make it a new SOP.
Okay, very cool, very cool. And so over the years, I guess you've developed a few of these new SOPs.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And then, so was this need to experiment yourself born out of like dissatisfaction for what grow information is out there? You know, for tomatoes, I mean, they've been studied from here to infinity and back. And, you know, to grow a tomato, there's probably a very, very thick training manual. But for cannabis, not so much.
Right.
And so have you been able to find quality information, or was this experimentation sort of born out of the need for it?
You know, I think the experimentation was born out of just a desire to keep improving and also just to keep things from getting stagnant. You know, I think that if you just keep repeating the same thing over and over again, it's kind of easy to get checked out. So I like to do experiments just for that sake, just to keep things interesting. But also I think that, you know, the more new methods of things that you try, like the more you're going to find, hey, this works, or hey, this doesn't work. And like you said, like, you know, cannabis is a pretty new industry. So there's not a whole, you know, there's not a whole lot of reliable information that has existed for a long time. And I think that, you know, we're kind of discovering that alongside everybody else in the industry. You know, I know since we grow on cocoa, like one thing that was said a long time ago is you can't overwater cocoa. I get a lot of people that come into the grow and like kind of think that, but at least personally, I found that not to be true. Like we can definitely overwater it.
Yeah, tell us about that. So people, I guess, are thinking that, you know, the cocoa will, there's a point of saturation and that's way below, that saturation doesn't knock out completely all the air that's in the root system. But I guess that's not true, or at least that water flows and can and to dissipate. But I guess that's not true.
Yeah, you know, I think that the cocoa itself, you know, is only going to hold on to so much moisture, but it's, I think the space that's in between, you know, little molecules of cocoa that is important. You know, if that space has enough oxygen, then your plant's going to do well. If that space is just totally saturated with water and your roots can't get enough oxygen, you're going to start getting negative things that start building up in the pot, you know, different root rot fungus like Pythium or Fusarium or, you know, some anaerobic bacteria or something.
And then, so how do you guys guard against overwatering cocoa? Like, it sounds like you found out that it's possible. So how do you guard against stopping that?
Well, so we use an automated irrigation system, but I still have my employees go through and like kind of check each plant every day, you know, like kind of lift the pot, make sure it's not too saturated. If it is too saturated, then pull the emitter and allow that plant to work through what it already has before you just keep dumping water on it.
Right, right. So that's a bit of a manual process, but you maintain it every day, I guess?
Yeah. It's
right. And how did you guys come to decide to do cocoa and hydro newts?
You know, I think that in the beginning, it starts with, you know, a lot of people think that you're going to get a little bit faster growth out of hydro than you are out of soil. So I imagine that that's right. Where it started with our initial like head growers. And I think that we kind of landed on cocoa instead of a fully automated hydro system, just kind of as a safeguard. You know, like I said, we have a very large facility and there's like 70,000 plants. So, right. You know, like, it takes a tremendous amount of power to keep all systems running, you know, and if in the event of a power outage, if you have a hydro system that's dependent on getting water, you know, like every couple hours, and you have a power outage that's several hours long, like your plants are going to be in trouble. The benefit of cocoa being, you know, you can kind of give it the amount of water that it needs for a day or, you know, more if you need to. And, you know, if that power does go out, like, well, it's a bummer they're not going to get light, but at least they're not going to wilt to death.
Right, right. So cocoa, you're saying more stable than a straight up hydro situation.
I think so.
Yeah, and I think most people would agree with that. And how did you guys, what informs the selection of the cultivars that you guys are growing?
You know, I think that there's a couple different categories that, you know, each cultivar kind of needs to hit. You know, it seems like what drives the sales in the market is potency. So if stuff's not, mm-hmm. you know, over a certain potency, it doesn't really matter how well it grows if you're not going to be able to sell it. You know, so that's one. You know, for me, and I would think a lot of other people, smell is pretty important. So, you know, we want stuff that kind of has like a unique terpene profile, or at least a pleasant one. And then, you know, it kind of has to fit into our grow cycle. You know, we have a 8-week cycle in bloom, you know, so if it's something that needs 12 weeks to mature, then it doesn't really do anything for us. You know, so it kind of has to fit into the, you know, into the program. And then yield too. You know, we're not strictly focused on yield, but I mean, you can have like the best plant in the world, but if it hardly yields anything, like it's going to make it very hard to be profitable.
Yeah, it makes the economics really tough.
Right.
Yeah, and so do you, with those genetics, are you guys also breeding your own strains?
We do not breed our own strains. You know, we have kind of a network of people that we can reach out to for new genetics. We're developing a seed project right now to, you know, do some pheno hunting to find new strains.
Oh, tell us about the seed project.
You know, the idea being that, you know, we'll talk to a breeder, we'll get, you know, several seeds and we'll pop, you know, a whole number of seeds of one strain and, you know, just kind of search for the traits within that strain that we want, you know, which one of those phenotypes is the most potent, which one has the best yield, which one has the best smell, you know, and we'll do a few different pheno hunts alongside each other at a time, you know, normally a handful of strains at a time.
Gotcha. But not you guys doing it. You've outsourced this to somebody
else. This is something that we'll do in-house, but we're not actually breeding the strains. You know, we'll reach out to a breeder to get seeds, and then we'll pop the seeds ourselves.
Oh, I see. Gotcha. This podcast is brought to you by Grower IQ, a compliant cannabis seed-to-sale and cultivation management platform. The first platform to integrate all facility systems like sensors, controls, QMS, and ERP, all into a single interface. Grower IQ changes the way cultivators use software, transforming a regulatory requirement into a platform to learn, analyze, and improve performance.
Very cool. So that's really interesting about the grow. I wanted to ask you, too, a very popular question right now. You know, COVID's come along. How has that changed your ops in the last 8 months and made things different for you?
Well, at first, I think it was pretty unclear, you know, what the pandemic was going to do to the market. I know, at least here in Colorado, like on day one, when they went to the stay at home order, they said that dispensaries were going to close. They said the liquor stores were going to close too.
Oh.
And that lasted a total of maybe 8 hours. And then they, you know, stepped back and they were like, okay, this is going to be, you know, an essential business.
Right.
But we did have to kind of trim costs and, you know, that entailed automating a few more things so that we didn't rely as heavily on labor.
Gotcha.
Which, you know, kind of also helps being able to spread out and run the garden in a socially distant fashion.
Was that a pain to transition to?
Yeah, I don't know if pain is the right word. It was definitely an adjustment, mm-hmm. you know. So right. one of the big things was that transition team, which is that, you know, kind of auxiliary team that I was initially hired onto, got right. eliminated, and a lot more of that work just kind of fell to the growers. We used to grow in larger pots, and we used to do a couple transplants throughout the process. Now we're growing in these cocoa cubes, which it's just a small, like 6x6 cube that the plant can stay in its whole life, you know, and you just hook it up with an automatic irrigation system. And you lose a little bit of that safeguard that we had talked about, you know, with the larger pot and being able to water it heavily, but right. you know, as far as automation goes, like it was, you know, kind of a necessary step that we had to take. And so far it's worked out well.
And I mean, so that's just a step towards efficiency. Do you think you're going to keep those changes then, or will you rehire those teams?
I think it will probably stick with the changes.
Yeah. I mean, that just makes more business sense. Unfortunate for the teams though. Now that you guys are back open, along with the dispensaries, have you guys noticed a change in sales?
You know, I think that there was an initial dip, probably in like okay. March or April, but to the best of my knowledge, like sales are doing as well as they ever have. You know, and I think it just kind of proves that cannabis, you know, is recession proof.
Huh. You know? Yeah, no kidding.
People are always going to need some sort of escape from, especially like such a bleak reality that 2020 has been for a lot of people.
Yeah. And with your entertainment and sort of options limited, there's not a whole heck of a lot to do. People are nesting, I guess. And that's one of the things you do when you nest.
Yeah, definitely. That was one thing that I always said, like, you know, I don't think the cannabis makes you lazy, but I do think it makes you okay with being bored.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I actually saw a post about that this morning. Yeah, I definitely would agree with that. Did you have to change any of your SOPs or infrastructure in terms of like keeping things clean in terms of COVID, or were those already in place because, you know,
not really. I mean,
you're already on guard for that.
Yeah. Like, I think that we were already trying to keep everything as clean as possible. Right. You know, the big grow is there's probably 250 people that work in that building, you know, so having wow. a janitorial staff, having to keep things clean, was already important. Yeah. I'm sure that they started, you know, sanitizing doorknobs more.
Right, but right.
Like large changes, I don't really think so.
But small spot things like that, that you may not have done before.
Yeah, and I guess like the one change that like I had made was just kind of spreading teams out, you know, so like in a post-harvest area where previously you'd have, you know, half a dozen people just kind of working all alongside each other. You know, just kind of change that so that they could at least be 6 feet apart and we could be conscious of social distancing and doing our best to right. slow the spread of the virus.
So are your trim teams now just really spread apart?
Yeah, I think that we've done that wherever possible, you know, kind of spread things into different rooms and maybe taking up a little more space than we were doing before. But, you know, I think it's all just being conscious of trying to slow the spread of the virus, you know, doing our part.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. One thing I need to ask you about is, grow software. So this is a Grower IQ podcast. Wondering what kind of, grow software you're using right now and, what you like and what you don't like about it.
So we have a,
or maybe software in general,
right. We have a building management system that was developed for us by a local company out of Denver that, you know, controls irrigation, controls CO2 levels, temperature and humidity, you know, just kind of like the main automated parts of the building. And I think it does a good job for the most part. There's probably improvements in any system that could be made.
Right.
But I think when you're looking at, you know, any sort of like software like that that's going to run your facility, I think for me, like having versatility built into it is pretty key. You know,
you might tell me about the versatility.
Well, I just think it's a bad idea to get so locked into doing things one way that, you know, it just becomes like a logistical nightmare to try and change anything. You know, but right, like already kind of having a versatile software that can adapt as your procedures adapt, you know, I think is pretty key.
Right, right. So you mentioned that software is running, is controlling the environment and stuff like that. What are you using for inventory and track and trace?
You know, as far as like plant inventory, we have to go through Metric, which is a state regulated thing. And that's like regulated by the MED. That's the seed to sale system that exists in Colorado and in a lot of other states. But we also have an ERP set up through Microsoft Dynamics that kind of helps control like supply inventory and, you know, different things like that. Just streamlines everything where all the data is kind of held in one spot.
Right. Oh, that's good. And then, so I guess all these pieces of software integrate to each other and talk to each other.
Right.
So what are your biggest headaches at the grow?
As far as like IPM goes, you know, like occasionally we'll see pottery mildew, you know, and I think that that's something that's very prevalent throughout the industry in Colorado and probably a lot of other places too. You know, we don't really see them here, but you know, I have a number of friends that work in the industry for other companies that, you know, have a hard time dealing with thrips or spider mites or root aphids. For us, you know, like prevention is key. What pesticides you're allowed to use is pretty strictly regulated by the Department of Agriculture. And, you know, it kind of seems like you get to a point where there's not a whole lot left on that approved list that will really help you eradicate a population of something that's already well established. You know, so just being vigilant and doing your best to prevent, you know, big outbreaks from happening is key. So for like powdery mildew, you know, we'll use like some oxidizers like xeritol, which is peroxide and peracetic acid, or we'll use some beneficial bacteria sprays like, you know, Bacillus subtilis spray. And then like,
are you buying that or are you making those?
We're buying it. We did, you know, kind of do some experiments with making it in house and just found it not to really be too much of a cost savings. And like when we were making it in house, like, you know, we would get, microbes from somebody and then just kind of brew it in house and apply it as like a beneficial foliar spray.
And how come you guys stopped doing that?
I think it was just, you know, kind of easier to go out of the bottle, and it really wasn't, there wasn't a whole lot of cost savings by doing it in-house.
Right.
And the nice thing about, you know, getting something from a company that's bottling it is you're getting the same thing every time. You know, they go through their own quality control to make sure that their product is what it says it's supposed to be every single time.
Right. And then they become pros at that process. And so why, you know, bring in another process that you guys have to manage, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like
that might be the idea.
We're cannabis growers. We're not bacteria growers.
Yeah, exactly. One more thing I wanted to ask you about. So I've seen some of these RFID tags out there. And I was wondering how helpful that would be to a grow, especially a grow your size. So instead of the barcodes, you can RFID tag them, and then they just, you know, if they pass a door, you can have a sensor there that can track and knows where the plants went. Is that something that's helpful to you?
Yeah, I definitely think that would be something helpful.
I guess you're using a lot of time scanning trees, plants.
Right, yeah. You know, so each one of the metric tags has a barcode, and it does have an RFID antenna in it.
Oh, does it?
Yeah,
oh,
okay. But we currently don't have something that's reading all those, you know. But, you know, something like you're right. describing, like, you know, having an RFID scanner at every door and just following exactly where those tags go and having that automated, you know, I think that that'd be very beneficial.
Any other things like that that would that you're hoping for or looking forward to bringing into the grow?
You know, I
or maybe it's on a wish list.
I think that, you know, it's important to just kind of keep your eye on what technology is developing. Like it is
right.
an exploding industry, and just kind of seeing what new technology develops and what might be beneficial for you. I saw a program that was made by Luna that kind of uses these cameras that scan over the canopy every single day, you know, multiple times a day. And it's kind of like a smart software and can develop as you develop, and, you know, you can kind of program it in specific ways, but it helps with scouting, you know, like might notice a plant that's wilting, or it might notice a plant that beginning to show signs of, you know, some sort of infestation. And then can send an alert to a grower who's in the area, like, hey, go check out this specific section of the room. You know, so I think software like that, like, it's definitely going to play a big part in the future of the industry.
Yeah. Yeah. The predictive analytics piece, I think, is really interesting. I was working with a group that, they had sensors and did algos that calculated, something called vapor pressure deficit. And that could, that was one of the leading signs to tell you if, a plant was going to get too moist or was too dry. And it could tell you much, much earlier on. And then so you can come and do your intervention, earlier and potentially save the plant. So those things are really, really interesting. And all coming down the pike, if not, out already.
Yeah, definitely.
Finally, Mike, are you headed to any of the conventions? Well, I guess we're not doing any conventions, but are you doing any of the online conventions? Like today is December 1st, and I think tomorrow or today is the first day for MJ BizCon 2020.
I personally don't attend very many of them, but you know there are definitely okay. people within our company that are attending those.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I guess it's a big shift. Everybody's going to do it virtually instead of going to the actual convention. But,
right.
Okay. Well, that's awesome. Mike, thank you so much for the time and the information. We really appreciate you being here. Best of luck.
Yeah.
Hopefully we get to chat again.
It was a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for having me.